Ahoy and welcome aboard Future Talk, a podcast series that is exploring visions for the future of science and technology. I'm your captain, Inace Dawson, and today I'm joined by fellow pirate and CEO of the Future Institute Workshop, Andrea Steinle.
Hello, Inace.
And Dr. Sophie von Stumm.
Hi, Inace.
Whom you may remember from our previous episode. She's a psychology professor, lecturer, scientist and researcher. Now, you probably guessed we aren't actually on a pirate boat, although I wish we were. We are in a recording studio, but the sounds, the ambience, the atmosphere might have given you the impression that we were there. You might have imagined what our surroundings might have looked like. And all of this actually ties into Andreas's personal vision on today's topic, which is social innovation. So without further ado, Andreas, could you tell us, in a nutshell, what your vision is about? What is social innovation?
Of course. Social innovation is focusing on societal progress. So if it's about finding a solution for a problem, it's not one-dimensional from only a technological or scientific perspective. It always puts the human in the center of thinking. And the sound of the pirate ship is a good example of a social innovation. Because in hospitals, we have the problems with MRI scans that children were always afraid of being put in these scanner machines. And one day an engineer, he was visiting hospital and wanted to see what happens with his machines there. And he was shocked when the doctors told him that most of the children need to be sedated. So he was very shocked and frustrated and began to think from a different perspective about that problem. And he was asking himself, what could we do to take the fear away from the children? And then he came up with the solution to make the MRI scanner into a pirate ship, to paint it like a pirate ship, and to paint the whole room of the hospital where the MRI scanner was located in, and make an adventure for the children out of it. So the children were told, you go on a pirate ship and you have a great adventure to experience, and you should be very silent and you should check if there are any pirates and see what's happening. And the result was that mostly none of children needed to be sedated anymore because they experienced it as a very adventurous travel. So this is a wonderful example for social innovation.
I think that is a brilliant example because MRI scanners indeed are very loud and very noisy and you have to stay put throughout all of these noises. I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on this as well, Sophie. What are your thoughts on social innovation? And how do you think it could benefit your particular field of research, which is psychology?
I think a key point that we're seeing here is that social innovation really requires psychological science to come to fruition and to work out. And ultimately, social innovation together with all other big societal processes requires an interdisciplinary approach where we bring together science, technology, understanding of communication, but also individual differences, in particular in understanding what a person's needs are in a given situation and how we can incorporate these needs in order to achieve the progress that we're looking for.
I'm also interested because you work a lot on the individual differences between people. And Andreas looks at social innovation, how we can combine those together. I would like to know, where does curiosity and social innovation meet?
It meets with the dimension of openness, which means that you're open for perspectives that are not your own ones. So this is so much related to the one dimension of curiosity, openness, that you won't have social innovation without curiosity.
I think Andreas makes a really important point here, but an additional thought is that one size never fits all. And social innovation, successful social innovation, takes that into account and recognizes how enormously different we are and therefore how different we respond to certain situations. And coming back to the example from the beginning with the MRI scanner and the children, some children find pirate ships quite scary. And so it will work for some, but not for everyone. However, the idea, the principle thought to use imagination, to use fantasy, to use play, to engage people in a procedure that is important for them to undergo at the moment, even though it is certainly comes with unpleasantries and difficulties, that is what we have to keep in mind, to think about the fundamental psychological process that underlies the mechanism that we need to achieve social innovation and then correspond to the individual differences that surround that.
Speaking of which, I'm also interested in knowing, are there any machines or processes that you would want to make more social or that you think could benefit from social innovation?
I think it's the complete field of health. There, social innovation can help a lot. We can optimize medicine and can produce the best pills, but human behavior plays a much larger role for the health of people. So can we motivate people to behave healthier, that they don't use the elevator, put the stairs, that they use a bicycle, that they eat healthier? There are lots of potentials to improve health of people, and it has nothing to do with medicine. Of course, it's important to do scientific research in medicine, but we should bring it together with healthier behaviors.
I think that's a really important idea, to use social innovation in the context of nudging. So to try and convince people through subtle hints to change their behaviors just a little bit towards a desirable direction, as, for example, improving health behaviors, drinking a little less, eating a little bit more vegetables, taking the stairs. But beyond that, I think social innovation is really taking place now in our political landscape, with several countries experimenting with a basic income rate, for example, and providing people, without going to work, a salary that would allow them to live off, and to see how that shapes and transforms society and makes people sort of, let's say, concentrate or reconnect to their original ideas rather than worrying about making an income and going to a job that they don't enjoy. And several countries have done that. Norway is one of them. Finland is another. And the jury is still out if it works or not. But even the United States are now starting a trial to do exactly that, to provide some of the people in the country with a basic income and see how that changes society as a whole. And I think that is one of the greatest experiments in social innovation in our time.
I did not know about that example, and I am already so excited to see how that goes. And Andreas, your example reminds me of these fitness apps that, you know, they use almost gamification. They turn the process of doing exercise that can be boring or a chore for many people and turn it into small, achievable goals that can provide that nudging factor that you were mentioning, Sophie. I'm also curious, is there anything you think social innovation could be missing?
I leave that to Andreas.
It's missing in almost every part of our world. There are so many fields where you could use it in a positive way. For example, in education, most schools and universities are managed like 100 years ago. You have a teacher and he's giving lectures, and then you have the students and they recapitalize what they've heard. But that's not how learning is really working. So we should have a human-centered approach related to social innovation, especially in the field of education, if we want to have people who are curious. And we don't produce curious people in schools and universities. There are lots of studies who show that the older a student is in a school, the less questions he's asking. So the kindergartners, they are the students that ask the most questions with the age of 5 or 4. And then it traps, it goes down, and people lose interest in asking questions because they are not motivated to ask questions. And that's really a problem for a world that needs curious people to solve the challenges of the future.
Mm. So aside from our example from earlier, I was interested in knowing, have you experienced social innovation on a personal level? I can certainly think of quite a few examples where I think it's been implemented well, and other cases where I think it might have missed the mark. And I'm curious whether there are any everyday examples that you've encountered.
Well, one personal example in my own work life is that we have our office at a co-working place, and the most important room in that co-working place where our office is close to is the kitchen. Very often people come together and cook together and share food together, and it's not planned. It just happens because different people meet there accidentally. But this is how knowledge is shared. This is how new contacts are made. This is how understanding for new cultures is made, because if you eat together, you exchange. So probably the kitchen is the most important room in that office. And this is also a kind of social innovation, how to engage people, how to bring them together, how to make them share knowledge. So in all companies, they should think about, do we have the right eating situation and how can we use it to bring people together to widen their perspectives by a big exchange?
Hmm. What about you, Sophie?
I think social innovation can really play a key role for engagement, and engagement is very important because it leads to so many other things in the working context. I like the idea that the kitchen is a central room of the office. But I also know of several businesses that, for example, insist on a lunch to be taken together by all employees, and they provide for that. Similarly, in the Nordic countries, for example, it's quite common to have sort of forced coffee breaks. One in the morning with the cake and coffee, and it's very typical at the universities there. And in Britain, we see that with a sense of envy and disbelief, and we say, how can you have coffee breaks for half an hour in the morning? What a waste of time. It turns out that the Nordic countries are more productive in terms of publishing papers and securing grant money than British universities on average. So it does say something about creating the space for people to come together, exchange ideas, take a break from what they're actually working on, free their mind, and then return re-energized to keep doing and developing their own ideas.
I'm also quite interested in knowing what is next for social innovation. So I thought it might be fun to play a little game to go hands-on on this topic. And what I'll do is I'll present two roles for different people, and I'd like you to try and come up with a social innovation solution for it.
No pressure.
That sounds interesting.
So one of the ones I had thought of that actually relates to the topic of education that was brought up earlier is the process of being a professor and a student and being able to be placed in a good learning environment and being able to make that process as efficient as possible. Now, I know you are a professor, Sophie, so I'm going to assign you the role of the student. And Andreas, you're going to be the professor.
Great.
And I'm curious to know what you come up with using social innovation to make that process simpler. It can be anything from how to aid understanding concepts, or something as basic as learning the names and the needs of your students at the start of the year, how to keep track of different things that are a bottleneck in education to get down to the core principles. Take it away.
As I'm the student in this game, I'm waiting for the professor to make the first move.
That's a good answer. as a professor, I would leave the classroom because most things you don't learn in the classroom, but by what you see outside. There are interesting studies that show that the top innovators in companies are these ones who spend less time in the company. because they get more inspiration, have more exchange outside. And I think the same is true for students. So spend less time in the classrooms.
Yes, I would echo that from a student-professor perspective, if I'm allowed to combine the roles. One of the most successful learning strategies of recent years or learning innovations is the so-called flipped lectures, where students prepare the lecture content before they attend the lecture. And in the lecturer themselves only goes over the content again. It's not a delivery of content to the student through the traditional model of one person talking for an hour and the student taking lots of notes, but the student basically working through the problem and the material prior to showing up for class. And then just revisiting the ideas and basically making sure that everything has been correctly understood. And that leads to a much more actively engaged problem-solving approach to learning rather than that spoon-fed, you might even want to call it consumer attitude, where the student just waits to hear a story and then we'll wait. And if we're lucky, the student absorbs the information or not.
That's interesting.
So it's almost like reversing the roles, where student is the professor and then the professor...
It is very much, and in fact, my students complained when we first did that, and I presented this. It does really well for teaching statistics, surprisingly enough. And the students showed up to the lecture, the first one of this kind, and one young lady was very brave and raised her hand and said, "So are you not going to teach us at all?" And she was completely disappointed that there was going to be no lecture from my end. And it was just an opportunity for her to ask questions and go over the materials again. But they got the hang of it very quickly. And I have to say, it was the best performing cohort in statistics that I had taught in years. So I do really think that the method itself improves the learning potential and achievement of the students.
In some ways, it reminds me a bit of the concept of tutorials at some universities, where students are sent away with a reading list and they must make with it what they will. Thank you, both of you, for entertaining my activity. So I guess the take-home message that I take from this is it's important to be incredibly open to other perspectives, being able to put yourself in the shoes of other people that might be experiencing a problem or seeing the same problem from different angles and finding a solution that accommodates all of them. And also particularly being able to involve and use creativity to come up with different solutions that haven't converged on already. Unfortunately, that brings today's episode to a close. So thank you so much, Andreas, for sharing your vision for the future with us today.
It was a pleasure to talk to you. Goodbye.
And thank you, Sophie, for joining us in our discussion and sharing your thoughts too.
Thank you. Bye.
Do join us for the next episode of Future Talk as we discover and debate even more perspectives on the future of science and technology. Thank you for listening, and remember to stay curious.